I love technology. It's awesome. Is it still doing things over here? I think I now have to push the button for the two M's. The one M, Himmelblum.
Thank you, sir.
Hey, how's it going?
Hey, it's good. You know, we're one day past Earth Day.
Woohoo! That's a good thing?
Yeah.
What do you mean? We made it through Earth Day? I think every day ought to be Earth Day.
Well...
But there's that one special day you're supposed to celebrate.
Well, yeah, just like every other...
Well, what if you're Russian? Isn't it come next Monday?
Good point. Never
Russian Earth
that.
Day. I mean, if you're on the other side of the horizon...
Well, the lunar calendar, yeah.
Does the moon come later up for Australians?
I don't know.
I'm not sure. Mike? So... This is your opportunity to come in and tell why you're here.
Well, I don't know. Someone said, come over to the
come
radio station and tell your story.
Tell your story. Share your story with the community.
Okay. Well, for those who don't know, there was a job advertised with the university back in the late 80s.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Late
80s. Yeah, and I
But where were you? Sitting on the couch somewhere, perusing the want ads.
No, I was doing a postdoc at that time, and the grant was running out, so I had to think.
Whoa. Scramble.
Yeah.
I'm going to be unemployed.
Yeah, where am I going to get?
Where am I going to go?
New money.
Yeah, where were you?
I was on the University of Massachusetts Amherst campus.
Really?
Yeah.
Is that the part of the globe you came from originally?
No.
Ah.
I'm from the Midwest.
You are. You can't tell.
Well, you know, it's a flat accent. No, I'm not Minnesota. I mean, I'm originally from near Chicago.
Are you really?
Yeah.
What do you mean?
Waukegan.
Waukegan.
Yeah.
Do you use the W, the A, Waukegan?
Waukegan, yeah.
Yeah.
It's sort of, you know,
it's
north,
a Wisconsin-y thing.
No,
up
it's
there.
North of Wakanda, Illinois. But, and south of the Zion nuclear plant.
Right.
It was a great growing up experience.
Huh.
But I moved around, yeah, collecting degrees.
So then you wind up in Massachusetts. You had not been to Alaska before.
This is correct.
Ah. So you threw in your hat and they said, sure, come on up.
Yeah. I thought I'd try it for a year.
Yeah? Were you saddled with baggage at the time?
Just what I had in my apartment.
No dogs, no cat, no wife, no kids?
Nah, just me.
And
going west, young man.
And it was to Kodiak, Alaska?
It was to Kodiak.
Really?
Yeah, that's where the job announcement said the position would be at the Fishery Industrial Technology Center.
So did they drag you up here and interview you first, or you do it on the phone?
Wow, I'll have to think about that. I got brought up for interviews, yeah, because it was a competitive thing. It just wasn't one
person. They didn't just were looking for one guy who put his hand up and said, yeah, I'll do it, sure.
Hey, here's a bag of cells. And maybe he'll come northwest for us. But yeah, you know, there was the interview process, and then later on I heard I got the job, and so then, I moved here October
27th, 1987. October 27th.
I can remember that.
So you came to interview probably in the summertime?
Probably early in that. Probably during the spring, I'm thinking.
Yeah. Do we have spring? Do we have summer? That's the real question.
Well, I know. I didn't bring a parka, so it must not have been too cold at the time.
Were you thinking you needed one, though? Made you do a little research first?
Well, you know, Alaska, you know, in the 80s.
Ween, Alaska?
Yeah.
No,
it was during Mark Air days.
Oh, Mark Air. Oh, yeah, all right. Me probably died in the early 80s.
But no, it was good. And so took a chance and been here ever since.
Really?
Yeah. Nonstop.
So the family come and visit you from Illinois? You still got family there?
Oh, no. They moved around. And they visited later on once I got the family established and all.
So did you meet your lovely spouse here?
In Alaska, yes.
You did?
Yeah.
And now you're here with kids and dogs and the whole works, and you
no
stayed.
No dogs, just kids.
Yeah?
Yeah.
So you've been here continuously in Kodiak since 1987.
This is true. Same job.
Same job?
Yeah.
But you're retired.
And I retired. How about that?
Oh, no.
One of those odd things. I didn't change jobs 6 or 7 times, which is kind of the norm. It just kind of grew on me year after year, you know? Yeah. Each year you have to sign a contract. Okay, I'll try it again.
What actually, for the people out there who don't know, who didn't run into you in the past, I know we saw your name on the ballot yesterday for the KEA Board of Directors.
Oh, yeah.
So that was a pretty competitive thing.
And, yeah, yeah.
And you did pretty well for not a first-time runner.
Not bad. No, that's very, very challenging.
For somebody in the you know, and you guys in the scholastic environment, you don't really get out much, do you? Hang out in your little lab.
Oh, come on. You know, no, you have to go out in public, you know, present your research and publish and go to
meetings.
That's
a kind of a limited little group of people who go watch it, though, aren't they, isn't it?
Well,
you run into some fishermen here and some intellectual types.
Yeah, but there are also, you know, local types of meetings. There's some that are geared toward the seafood industry, like the Pacific Fisheries Technologist Meeting, which meets every 6 years in Alaska.
I'm just giving you a hard time, you know that.
That's okay. this is not like taking a final exam or anything.
Yeah, I know. You would have made it. But you actually got out a lot because of your kids, too. I mean, I think I saw you out more in public with KMXT events and with sports events involving your kids than in your job.
Yeah, that could be said. Yeah, yeah.
And you used to do radio things here too.
Used to do radio. Used to be on the board too.
Yeah, that's correct. You did.
Yeah.
How'd you get roped into that?
Oh, I don't know. Brad Stevens twisted my arm.
Ah.
So they say we need some more people.
We need a warm body.
Yeah, it was around 92 to 95 when we were getting close to getting the building built.
Right.
That was a good time.
Fun days.
Yeah.
Those were fun.
I remember
days.
Being at the Borough Building. That was a nice cozy station.
Cozy, but cozy was the word for it. It was dirty, as I remember. It was dirty.
Well, maybe that's because you live there, but
no, you know, it's all the records and the dust, and I mean, I don't know. There was something. It was so compressed. It just seemed as all I remember is being in the back room cutting tape, you know, having a lot of dirt around and walking through those shallow little aisles, right. And there were records everywhere, sitting on the floor dealing with records on Friday nights.
Yeah, yeah, I remember. That's right, yeah. Used to do the show, you know, Hearts of Space or what else do they do? I can't remember. Maybe Friday Night Rock.
Women Who Are Stronger Than Dirt.
That was your show.
No, that was D-Tod's show.
No, D-Tod.
I would just come in and help sometimes, but that was mostly his deal. Yeah.
It was a good show he had.
So you stayed.
Yeah. How about that?
So
much to the consternation of my parents.
Really?
When are you coming back?
Never. I'm here for good.
Well, you know, things are good here. You know, run my own lab, you know, write for grants, teach, do some public service. Pretty low stress.
Yeah.
For the most part.
Comparatively so to other places in the world, but so you get yourself pretty involved. So what exactly did you do when you were working?
Oh, when I was working? Well, my specialty was in seafood microbiology. So learned about all the kinds of bacteria that would spoil fish and ways to prevent that from happening so that we have a better quality product going out the door.
And it's improved considerably over the years.
So people say, but I'm sure there was very good quality at the time. But, you know, there's highs and lows depending on who's processing and what kind of techniques they're utilizing to ensure that they have good quality fish.
Mm.
But then, you know, where the money for funding really came from was for seafood safety, you know, those bacteria that will cause illness and potentially death. And so I got roped into doing some of that. Try to find ways to make sure those organisms don't get into our food supply.
Good idea.
Yeah. We want a living consumer, not a dead consumer.
Yeah, then they won't buy anymore.
if they're not alive, this is true.
So why did you stay? Was it because the job was always just entertaining? You liked the community? Well, I mean, that's a long time to just stay in one community at one job.
Yeah, well, you know, the job was great. I was always, you know, enriching my brain, trying to figure out, you know, what are my colleagues doing in food microbiology and try to learn from them and bring those technologies to Kodiak. so that we could apply those types of techniques in the laboratory. That really got me going. But, you know, the community, you know, the atmosphere of being here, pretty low stress. I don't think I would have done very well on, like, a major campus where there's so much competitive cutthroat going on.
Right.
You know, essentially, I was the only one doing microbiology, so it has pluses and minuses. I mean, I couldn't go down the hall and talk to a fellow microbiologist, but I got to work with some really great people who knew about seafood quality and technology and engineering. So we were able to work together in collaborative efforts throughout the years, and it was a great time. So, and it paid pretty well, so I thought, well, maybe I'll stay around.
So who took over from you?
Nobody.
Nobody.
Well, you know what? The university is under dire straits, you know, in terms of funding.
I've heard that rumor.
But, you know, for many years, you know, your university has been going through a cut because there's just not the funding going to our institutes of higher learning. So, that's why my position is not being refilled. However, I do help out with workshops that Alaska Sea Grant puts on at the center there, since they could use a microbiologist who knows their way around the laboratory, and so then I team up with them and help them out.
Huh.
Yeah. I still know my way around the building.
I would imagine.
And I have some institutional knowledge about how the university works.
So is there unused space over there, is what you're saying?
Yeah, there is some unused space, but it depends which direction they want to go. I think they're in the middle of interviewing people for a mariculture specialist faculty member. So that'd be the newest person hired there in over, I don't know, 5 or 6 years.
Mariculture.
Primarily seaweed.
Ah.
So try to help industry troubleshoot and learn about what are the best species to grow, how to market the product. It's the go-to crop for Alaska, you know, renewable,
right.
Easy to grow.
Easy to grow, yeah.
Yeah, it seems like it. And people are interested in consuming it.
Well, we're going to need food, all of us, at some point in time.
And it's a healthy, it's a superfood.
It is.
Yeah, it's like the kale of the ocean. It is, that's what I've heard.
I have nothing bad to say about it. I went on a kick for a while back in the 80s and where I ate a lot of seaweed soup and made things.
It's good for you.
I just don't know which ones of them to pick up off the beach and throw on the plate.
Well, fortunate for you, there are booklets and brochures from the Alaska Sea Grant bookstore.
I know that.
That have instructional guides on what to eat. It really isn't like a deadly seaweed out there. Which is kind of a nice thing. Not that I can think of. Do you know of one?
You're the one that would know. I mean, not
well,
I.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I don't know everything. I just know a little bit of lots of things.
Well, mushrooms, I know you get the book and you look at the book very carefully.
That one's different.
You try it on somebody else.
Right.
Or clams. Or, you know, I'm still depressed that after all these years we haven't. Because you got me all excited thinking that you were going to develop a little tester thing.
No, I wasn't going to develop. I was going to apply known technology, and that's what we did in our project, is that we bought off-the-shelf test kits to see if it would be viable. Creating a new test kit for rapid, quick, short time, cheap, it's not out there.
Right.
And the biochemistry of the toxins is so complex.
There's got to be like a sniffer dog you can develop, you know, that you can take. There's so many dogs.
Well,
on there
the is. I mean, there was a study back that the sea otters know the difference between toxic and non-toxic
but
shellfish.
We would have to be a native, though, to be able to take one to the beach with us, right?
Well, this is true.
Well,
it's all possible. If someone could figure that one out.
Pedro the sea otter, take him out for a little walk and see whether or not the bivalves are hot or not.
Right, but that'd be pretty challenging, I think. It's not like your average dog. I mean. But, you know, we did domesticate wolves, and now we have canines, you know, same family, so.
There's a possibility, is because because there's so many different plankton in the water, is that what it is?
Well, it's not just the plankton, it's really what do these the Alexandrium species, what they're able to produce, and there's like dozens of chemical forms of the toxin. That's what's the problem. It's not just one single compound. If it was, it'd be simple. But here, if you test for toxin A, B, or C, that's great. But what happens if
it's D,
E, and F? Then that means you have, you know, a false negative, meaning that it will harm you because the test kit failed to detect these.
Well, and then the tide comes in and the tide goes out.
This is true.
And, you know, from one day to the next, it could be totally different.
And on top of that, the shellfish actually change the configuration of the toxin chemistry.
They do.
They do.
On purpose?
This is the million-dollar question. There probably is a reason why these clams and other organisms sequester or hold on to toxin is so that they don't get
eaten.
Yeah, they're a little bit smarter than we were led to believe. This is right. You know, they concentrated in the tip of the siphon, and so then when a fish comes and nips off the siphon,
it dies off,
or it gets repelled or something like that, and the shellfish can
Who
go
knew?
Back. Well, this is the theory. And then humans came along saying, hey, that looks interesting. Let's eat that.
So Benny the bivalve changed.
Well,
and adapted to whacking us off.
Well, or it's just doing what it's always done for thousands of years. It's just that we came along and we were kind of hungry and we thought, hey, this looks like something good to eat. Wrong answer. Sometimes.
That's why you have the King's Tester, you know? There are certain things to be said about that.
Now, well, I know. A natural organic toxin. How do you like that? Ick.
I'd prefer not to.
Same here.
So is there something to be said about one beach being safe? And no.
No.
On the mainland, they have certified beaches.
Because the government in those states, maybe California, Oregon, Washington, they have a dedicated program where they actually pay to have beaches certified.
Don't we have some in Homer? No.
It's, they say Clam Gulch or Deep Creek, but that doesn't hold water anymore because there have been some instances around there. The only safe shellfish are the ones that are tested for commercial purposes. The state cannot afford to test every beach on 32,000 miles of coastline.
Right. You're saying if you're a commercial oyster farmer up in Homer, mm-hmm. that you have to have your product certified at a lab.
That's right, DEC lab.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Well, again, the question is, it's fascinating me, but if it's good one day, how do you know it's good the next?
You don't. Because you're dealing with a biological organism that, depending on tides and solar radiation and salinity and wind direction, you really don't know. And then where are the shellfish and which ones are actually accumulating by filter feeding? There's a lot of parts to the puzzle.
Okay, so what can go wrong with seaweed?
What could go wrong with seaweed?
Say we decide we're going to switch over and we're going to grow huge quantities of mm-hmm. seaweed around here for commercial purposes.
That's a good question. I think people need to look into it to see if there's anything else that a seaweed might pick up. Not necessarily toxins, but other kinds of metals or minerals and things like that. Because too much of a good thing, even eating too much seaweed, might be potentially hazardous. I mean, if you're eating pounds of it a day.
But like perch out of Lake Michigan or something.
But I think it's something that needs to be looked at because we do import seaweed from other countries, and there are reports that some have high metal contents, potentially from pollution.
Whoa.
But we don't have that kind of pollution here.
What if you had, you know, the Fukushima seaweed? I wonder if it's
Something to
irradiated.
Think about. I don't know. Those are things that would have to be looked at, and maybe this mariculture expert who comes to town, once they get the person hired and they're on the ground here, can provide those answers because I'm not really well versed in that area. But from a food safety aspect in terms of, you know, microbiology or toxicity from dinoflagellates, I really haven't seen anything that's occurred with it.
So what can we do with jellyfish?
Well, it's eaten in various countries.
I know.
But, you know, it's a discerning palate. You know, I don't know how it's prepared or, you know, in terms of how much a person would want to consume.
It seems we have a abundance of jellyfish
here. It is an abundant resource. If you can get past those stinging tentacles. I mean, you wouldn't want you know, consume that and then your mouth has a problem.
Well, then you wouldn't eat for a couple of days, maybe. So
which
maybe
would probably be a bad situation also. But I don't know. That's something that people might want to look at because, yeah, we have, you know, a marvelous ocean out there. There's a lot of organisms that don't make it into the marketplace, mainly because we haven't found the particular consumer who would take on those products. But, you know, years ago, people were saying, ooh, sea cucumber, ick. But, you know, that commands a pretty high price, actually, when it's harvested and then dried and sent off. And it's consumed quite a bit. Right. So, you know, you have to know who your consumers are and where that market is. And then you partner up with the fishermen or the industry that can actually, you know, harvest that resource. And then that's how you connect the dots.
So was a lot of your work in the lab or on the water?
In the lab, yeah, primarily. I really didn't do any kind of environmental microbiology. I could have, but there really wasn't a need. The mission was to find ways to help the seafood industry in situations that they wanted some answers to why products were not having a long enough shelf life or ways to make sure that the product isn't contaminated by some of these pathogenic bacteria.
So you've seen a lot of changes in what kind of seafood that we've pumped through here over the 30 years?
I've seen a little bit. I really haven't been in the industry. I mean, I'm pretty much an academic. So some of the projects were tied in with the industry. We'd go over to the plant, take some samples. But for the most part, we would work with the bacteria that we had isolated from various seafoods and work with those organisms in the lab.
Mm. It's kind of fascinating. I mean, what's a... When you went to work, what was a normal day for you?
I don't know. Well, you know, it's a regular job. It's not just, you know, kind of an odd thing. I mean, I started before there was the internet, so things were a lot slower in those days, where you could, you know, wait for your research papers to come by snail mail, and you have to use the telephone, you know, the dial up and all. But the changes that occurred since starting until I finished were, you know, major, because you can get ready time information. You can download articles. I spent a lot of time just trying to read through some of the scientific journals to find out what were the new things that my colleagues were doing, you know, to try to further advance science, to understand more what's going on with the microbial world. So that would be a lot of it. Some of it would be spent doing university work, trying to, you know, keep the university functioning, so we'd have meetings to try to figure out budget and policies and try to bring on students and how to operate as a research unit, but also provide teaching. And of course, before the internet, and we also went to the main campus in Fairbanks and taught some classes, and then of course later on we were able to deliver those by two-way distance communication.
Right.
And then writing grants, reviewing other people's grants as a peer reviewer of manuscripts to journals, writing up our research reports to submit them to journals to see if they could get accepted, and then modify them based on a reviewer's suggestions. So yeah, a lot of thinking and doing.
Right.
A lot of desk work, but I really enjoyed being in the lab as much as I could.
You know, into something else here, I noticed your son's little picture pop up last night in the video presentation.
Oh, yeah.
Where he's off. He's going to go to Fairbanks and to school.
Yes, he is. Yeah, yeah. He graduates this May. So.
But he's going in for computer science. Is that what I read?
Well, look at the age we're in right now.
Right. No, so. I'm not critical of it. I just thought, you know.
What, are you following my footsteps? No, I think he's got his own route, and he's pretty adept at utilizing these new forms of tools that we use in our lab all the time. You know, you can't go to any laboratory anymore without seeing computer-assisted technology.
Right.
And having people who are versed in that is really important, because I'm not. I mean, I would, you know, push the buttons like you're doing here on the station and make things operate, but to break it down into the software and the language, that's not me, but that's probably going to be him.
Yeah. But he's going to stay in the state.
Oh, for the time being.
Yeah.
We'll see.
So does that mean you're staying in the state too?
Yeah, I think so. I think we're going to hang around. I don't really have any grand plan to leave at this point. Like I said, I'm helping out as at the, now it's called the Kodiak Seafood Marine Science Center, in various workshops. I'm also working in, on other board of directors, such as the Kodiak Public Library Association, where I serve as vice chair. And then I'm also on the Alaska Food Policy Council, which is a statewide network of individuals trying to solve food insecurity issues.
So that thing where you, people say that you're retired now, what do? That's not really it's not really an issue, right?
No.
And you're busy, and you're happy.
Not so much stress. Just I can pick my hours, because I'm not drawing a daily paycheck. You know, just retirement stuff. And it's fun. I keep using my brain because you have to exercise that
you do
organ. Otherwise, it kind of atrophies, and you're like, oh, man.
Brian, I'll have to push you down the hall again.
No. It's all good. And, you know, the community's great. You know, it's always something interesting to learn about. You know, we got a great arts council. You know, amazing recreational opportunities.
Could be one in the backyard here too.
Well, we'll see if that comes to fruition. But yeah, it's good to see the changes. It's hard to believe it's gone by so fast.
Yeah. Well, I think we're gonna, since we talked for half an hour, we may as well play some of your music. Is that the deal?
You can if you want. I don't know what the plan was here.
I think it was probably just to kind of pick your brain, figure out, you know, how you were involved in the community, how you got here, because everybody has a sort of a unique, different story if they're not from here.
Right.
It's one of those things where I think somebody, I was at a, talk at one time where somebody was talking about, you know, here we are, we're at the end of the world for to a lot of people, and you really have to want to come here, and really you're going to want to have to stay here. You have to have a reason for it. So it's sort of like the oddballs tend to collect together.
I wouldn't go that far.
No, I wouldn't either, but, you know.
And I don't think it's the end of the world either. I mean, there are a lot of other places that are extremely
remote.
No. I mean, really extreme places, you know, like, you know, the South Pole.
The Hebrides. Yeah.
I mean, those things are pretty extreme.
But of all the places in the world to go to, you know, this is off the beaten track. It's not way off the beaten track, but it's, you know, if you were going to go to Homer on a regular lark, that would be kind of an extreme Alaskan adventure, even though you can still drive to it. But to take the extra, you know, $300
or the ferry trip,
and then to come here and not just to see it, but then to decide that you want to stay here and be here for 30 years is
it's kind of unusual, but not that far out. I mean, we have, you know, retired Coast Guard personnel who serve an incredible term, and then they decide to retire in Kodiak. But then look at the state of Alaska. It's not the most populated state in the Union, and for good reason, probably, because a lot of people don't enjoy the downtime when the weather's not so great, or can't get to your favorite mall, or, you know, you're not close enough to Tiffany's. Or
do you have a favorite mall?
Not really.
Yeah.
No. But, it's
malls drive me nuts.
Yeah, it's not for everybody, but for those who like this kind of lifestyle, I think it's fine. I don't have any regrets.
Good. I mean, it's a long way from Waukegan.
Yeah, but that's like in the dark ages. Claim to fame. Yeah, I went to a junior high school. It was named after Jack Benny.
Really?
Yeah, you remember Jack Benny, right?
Oh, sure. Jack Benny in Rochester, sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
What do you mean? It was Jack Benny High School?
Jack Benny Junior High.
Really?
Yeah.
After, because he lived there or something?
He was in the area, yeah. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. I got to meet him once, yeah. It was great.
Really?
Way back in the day.
I got to meet Mayor Daley.
Which one? Which daily?
The one. Oh. The boss.
Oh, the major.
We got to sit on his lap during a baseball game.
Woo-hoo.
Woo, it was awesome.
Was that White Sox or Cubs?
Yes, it was at White Sox.
Okay,
Park.
White Sox.
Comiskey.
Yeah.
Well, instead of what they call it now. I think we're going to play one before we go in here because I want to figure out what's going on from Pam as to what we're doing right now.
I don't know. We haven't been kicked out yet, so I guess we're doing okay. Unless they pulled the plug.
She can come right in if you want to.
I don't know. What do you have going on at this hour? Oh, she's walking away, so I guess we're good.
it's Guestville, you know. I think it's just a rotational thing of one person after the next coming in here so we can get as many of these stories out as we can.
Is that a way to bring in those wrapped in view listeners so that they can contribute to the fundraising? Is that part of this deal or no?
That was kind of a softball question you just threw me, wasn't it?
I don't know.
You have to get me on track as to why we're doing this, actually.
Yeah, let's bring in Ryan. He's not doing anything.
Well, the radio station has changed an enormous amount. I mean, you probably got involved in it pretty quickly when you got to town.
Yeah, I had time on my hands.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a great learning experience, actually. Trying to think back. I think back when I was at a junior college, community college, they had a little closet-size radio station, but it could only play within the cafeteria area.
Oh.
And so that was kind of my first inclination to radio. And then when I was at UMass Amherst, I started learning about public radio because they had five college radio, WFCR, and that was great. And so learned about NPR a little bit more, and then when I got to Kodiak, I was like, oh, right, there's a public radio station. So that made my day.
It makes a lot of people's days. It's one of those things where I think there's a lot of young people when they first move to a community that's one of the prerequisites of whether or not they're going to move to the community is whether or not, you know, everybody's got their own preferences for what they want out of a community. But public radio has always been up there on a lot of people's list because they travel around the country and listen to it all the time.
Right. Yeah, good shows, good programming. And, of course, what I like is the local programming. You know, getting to hear friends and others put on their shows and having a good time presenting some to the audience. And it's just great, great opportunity.
Well, we've always kind of prided ourselves on the fact we have an open door, you know, that we will train you to come in here and do this, and that anybody can do it for the most part. But it's gotten a lot more technically challenging over the years.
Computers. Right.
The bane. Salvation or the bane? I'm not sure which one they are.
That's right. When I was here much earlier in my career, it was, like you said, LPs and reel-to-reel.
Real to real cart machines.
The cart machines.
The DAT.
The thing
machines.
That's the word, the DAT. Our DAT.
The thing you put the 8-track in the thing and it'd keep playing around in circles. Or you'd turn the DAT on at 8 o'clock because Marion McPartland was supposed to play and it would.
I know. I've got a good show.
Yeah, it was great.
So things have evolved and that's good. And the station has pretty much kept going. I mean, you know, when I got here, it was just a one station, KMXA, but now you got HD 1, 2, 3, and
KODK.
KODK, which I kind of listen to that, sorry to say, a little bit more than I do the main station, but it's still part of KMXT family. Doesn't that count?
Yeah. I mean, we're still trying to make more connections with people to get more local content on those channels.
I like the dial. It's 90.7. I mean, can't beat that.
You can't forget it.
That was very shrewd. KODK. I wonder how they came up with that.
We had to fight off the Christians.
Nah.
Yeah.
What?
That's what happens. When they... It's a long, complicated
because
story.
Of bandwidth? Bandwidth.
When the FCC finally decides that they're going to get off their butt and actually start assigning channels.
Because those are limited to some degree?
Yes, they're limited. The bandwidth's only got this much, so you have to make an application for a blank space on the FM dial. Okay. And you may make two or three different applications for different frequencies.
Okay.
So then 10 years after you make the application and they decide, okay, well, let's open up the bandwidth here and see who's there, then they've got 15 people applying for this frequency. So
how do they decide? Who gets what?
You get, it's a point system. Who has local presence, who has a building in the community, what kind of programming you have, la-di-da. So we were awarded two different frequencies.
And
we had to settle a law, pretty much it's like a you make a settlement agreement with somebody else because you're in a competing frequency, and we made a deal with the alternate people that were fighting for 90.7.
Oh, right. Where was
so
that going to be located?
That.
Where was...
Well, whether we were at 91.8 or, you know, 96 point something, but we wanted 90.7 because of the area code. So.
Yeah.
So we did it. They didn't think of it. We got it.
Very shrewd.
Yeah.
That's good, and it's
no,
very,
I
it's
love
catchy.
That station. I love that station because I just like the programming that's on it.
Right, because some of it, you alternate it with the different stations, HD 1, 2, and 3, and KDOK. I mean, isn't there some...
Some of the KODK programming is on HD 3, like Milk Street Radio is on tomorrow afternoon at 3 o'clock on KMXT, and it's on Saturday morning on KODK.
Well, that's great, because, you know, for different audiences and different times of day.
They don't miss it. I mean, like, you know, we know Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is one of the most popular shows on the air, so it's on three times a week on... that, or a program like Snap Judgment, which is great storytelling, is on three times a week on different frequencies. So, because it comes back to the old days with Sarafchuk, you know. Sarafchuk, whether he knows it or not, you know, his tendencies tended to influence what we did a lot of times. And back in the old days, remember Hearts of Space used to be on at 9 o'clock on Tuesday nights?
Oh, yeah.
And then Mike would come on and do his show from 10 o'clock until 12 o'clock.
That's right.
And we finally told him, dude, this is fine in the middle of the wintertime, but right now in the summertime when there's 20 hours of daylight, we're not playing this Hearts of Space thing at 9 o'clock on a Tuesday night. Nobody's listening to it.
Right.
Or you put them all to sleep.
So we wound up on Sunday, and that's, I got the
Sunday, you're going to sleep.
Yeah, 11 o'clock, 11 to midnight, right?
Right.
Yeah.
And or it's on at like 5 o'clock in the morning on Saturday morning, and then we still get people calling and going, oh, my God, woke up at 5 o'clock, and I had to listen to this droning bells.
Yeah, but then, but you also have another sounding board. You have the Community Advisory Board, which I served on for about a year or so.
Right.
And that's where you get a lot of great community input about, you know, how the station should run and how to address issues that come up that are not really in the purview of the corporation, where they're dealing more with budget and other kinds of things, but it's like a listening board.
Well, you know, we're going to make them more prominent because they've got, it's a good thing. I mean, if you knew who they were, they could be our ambassadors out there because they really want to go out and collect information from people to help make decisions on what's working, what kind of programming do you have that works.
Yeah.
They're going to work heavily here with Maggie.
Who has just stepped into the station.
Stepped into the station so that we can start doing news programming and stories that are more tailored towards issues that are current to people in the community. You know how that was. I mean, you used to go through the issues list on the cab.
Oh, right.
Well, given the times that we live in now, the issues are pretty, we think that we know what they all are, but we're going to try and define them a little bit better so that we can tailor some of our news and our talk programming and maybe some of the stuff that's on KODK towards what interests people. I mean, there's a lot of things that people want to talk about nowadays.
Well, that's what the beauty of having a, you know, a local public broadcasting station is to, the public is involved. The P in public.
That's right.
Not the P in public. But
the P in. Well, you know, you guys, when the library was going undergoing their let's build the library.
Oh, that was huge.
Yeah, it was a huge project. Huge. And after it got completed, then there was, we got all the radio programs that were coming out of your board over there, the public library board. There was story, you know, book club stuff.
Oh,
there
right.
was, yeah. They did a program every week that
right.
was, I mean, Athenia would be in the back room for 15 hours a time.
And that's probably the reason why
that's why the reason she was out
there's
of
only,
it.
There's a limit to our volunteer hours, I think. It makes it a challenge. But, yeah, there's some good efforts that were put out. But, you know, it's nice being, you know, next door to the library. I mean, as another public resource, it's just, you know, fantastic location.
It's great.
A great vision for the people who sought out public comment, like, where should we build this new library? What should it look like? Where should it be situated? I think it's just fantastic.
It's a community hill. I just like that mm-hmm. whole concept of having, you know, the high school, mm-hmm. the middle school, the borough building,
right.
and
right.
us, and the Red Cross even.
Yep.
You know, everybody's in one little area, and I'd love to turn that into a nice communal area in the back. And then I think that's kind of a, it's that capital campaign thing that you guys went through.
Right.
You know, everybody's excited. You got a big project. You got something you're going to look at. You reach it, and then what do? So that's your next task, I think, is the Friends of the Library Association kind of thing is, you know, now the library's here. How do you get people to be on your board?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you just went through that hassle, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we picked up a couple new board members, so we're happy with that. We still have two vacancies on our 9-member board, all volunteer. And so,
without the goal in hand, though, it's hard to recruit, isn't it?
Well, I think just about any kind of volunteer board at this stage is challenging. From what I've heard, you know, there's a lot of nonprofits in town, and a lot of them are struggling because they can't find enough people to, you know, do the heavy lifting to keep their mission going. So,
right.
Yeah, I think that's one of the drawbacks of being in a small community because, you know, you might be wearing 3 or 4 different hats, but, you know, pretty soon you run out of hats, and what do you do?
It's not only the graying of the fleet, it's the graying of the boards. So there's lots of opportunities for people to get
yeah.
involved in things. We're
right.
just going to have to trust that the younger generation is going to do it.
I think so.
Yeah.
Or some things go by the wayside. Hopefully not public radio, but you know, other things that, you know, people find, well, we've accomplished that mission and we need to move on and find out if there are some other areas that we haven't tapped into that need to be addressed.
Maggie, are you in here to talk to us?
I'm supposed to nudge you along.
Oh, are we done?
I came to check on the fish show because the fish show is done. And
is there other people out there waiting to come in?
Stosh is out there. I don't know if he's coming.
Ooh. Oh, yeah. Okay.
There you go.
So we're going to play one of Brian's songs as a transitional thing.
Oh,
which one of them should I play?
Gosh, which one should it be? Well, how many minutes do you have?
I don't know. They'll probably, it depends on what Stosh's timetable is. It looks like we're 20 minutes overdue here, so.
Sorry.
You got 3 minutes, 4 minutes, or 4 minutes, or 4 minutes?
I don't know. Any of them will do. It depends on how you feel, what the atmosphere, what your audience want to hear. It doesn't have to be about what I thought was interesting.
Well, we'll just play Bowie. Why not? Hey, thank you, Brian.
You're welcome, Mike. Always a pleasure to be in the studio with you. Maybe I'll be back in another capacity.
I love being random with you, dude. Hey, we're still down here.
Oh.
We're
right.
still down here accepting pledges, too.
486-3181. I still remember the number.
Stop on by. No pressure.
About
turned away from it all like a blind man. Sat on the fence, but it don't work.
Keep coming up with love, but it's so slashed and torn.
Why?